All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Hey, welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. Welcome to Veterans Radio. We are truly all over the world on today's program. I'm really excited to have you listen to the people that we have. We've got a group from out in California called Elder Warriors, for all of you that look like me. And we are going to be talking to them about their program and what they've got going out there. And they have number of special events that are geared toward the elder warrior and also to the civilians to try and figure out what is going on in these Vietnam veterans' heads that are out there. Also joining me a little bit later on from Australia is Tom Williams. And Tom has written a number of books. Actually, he started off with a series of books called Heart of a Marine. And we're going to be talking with Tom about how he started writing. He's a lieutenant colonel, retired. His first book is Doorsteps of Hell, book number one. And so we are going to be talking with him. If you want to get in on the action and you feel like talking with any of our guests, please feel free to do so. The number here locally in Michigan is 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. Well, before we bring on our first guest, I got to thank our sponsors. We can't do this without them. Oh, I should have reminded everybody. Last weekend we had our Radio on the River fundraiser. I want to thank everybody that participated in that. We made our goal and more. It was really an exciting afternoon. And I want to thank all of you out there across the country again that support Veterans Radio and with your donations. And it was really fun. It was a great time had by all. And Doug Bradley from We Got to Get Out of This Place, that's his book, was our guest speaker. And it turned out that it went really well. People really enjoyed, played a lot of music. And you guys can do that if you want to. All right. So we got to thank our sponsors. And we would not be here without them, of course. Number one is Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. Give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. Remember, if you are a veteran-owned business out there and you want to do business with the federal government and many corporations, you need to get certified, because certification means that you are actually a real live veteran-owned business. There are a lot of people out there that say they are veteran-owned, but they're not. So make sure if you are, you want to make sure you get certified. And these are the guys that can do it for you. NVBDC.org. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. The Vietnam Veterans of America National. Never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. For more information, go to their website, vva.org. Locally, the Irwin Press Corps and American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you'd like to support Veterans Radio, please go to our website, veteransradio.org, and click on the donate button. Thank you in advance. Now let's get into the program. All right. So joining me on a line from an organization, as I mentioned before, called Elder Warriors. Out in California, we've got Father Michael Cicinato. He is the president of the organization. I knew I'd do that. Peter Sternberg, who is one of the directors, and Michael Brewer, who is a Marine Corps squad leader in Vietnam. He is also one of their directors. So I wanted to welcome all you gentlemen to our program. And thank you. So let me start off with Michael. You're the one that made the initial contact. So tell me a little bit about Elder Warriors.
Well, it's hard to share a lifeline.
Recording in progress.
Oh, I had an audio interruption there. Hard to share a 77-year-long lifeline of involvement with veterans activity, but I'll do it. Being a little Irish, I'll do it as fast as I can. In 1969, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I had a pretty rotten experience in Chicago. And upon returning to the University of Arizona, I checked in the Student Health Center. That was 1970. And about three or four of us got the diagnosis of Vietnam syndrome. They gave us Valium. They didn't know what else to do. Didn't make for real exciting Friday night dates. And five of us started our own group at the Student Health Center and ended up being guinea pigs for the training of psychiatric interns, a guy named Dennis Erickson. That was 1971. That year, I was on a program called GI Update in Tucson, an ABC affiliate, and the station manager wanted to talk about Vietnam, and we didn't get very far. They didn't grasp the fact that we were just trying to tell stories. We weren't anti-anything. We weren't anti-war. We just wanted to share our experiences. We were opposite national football. They didn't get very far. Lasted about 6 weeks. Fast forward, I used my GI Bill to go to nursing school. Was hoping to work with veterans at that time in the 70s, but myself and the medical community having no difference of opinion with them, just a personal feeling like we are ships passing in the night. I worked at night shift at St. Mary's Hospital in Tucson. A lot of suicide prevention work, a lot of great in-service training, gestalt therapy and all that. Well, the docs, when a vet would come into the ER having flashbacks, they'd tag him as schizophrenic and give him Meloril. Well, that was the final straw for me. I realized that was not going to be my vocation if that's the kind of hierarchy and authority I had to deal with. I went on in time to join some retreat circuits in Arizona, one called Vets for Vets. I was their token non-vet. It was formed by a former Marine captain, Jim Driscoll, to deal with Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And I was literally the only Vietnam veteran there. I think it was designed on purpose. Great retreats, great experience. Moved on to a retreat program called the Merit Center Retreat Program in Payson. A lot of Native American involvement, Hopi Indians and all. And then comes a move to California. And I attended an Edward Tick retreat in Joshua Tree. Williams probably knows. I don't know if the listeners know. The Joshua Tree is right at the front door of 29 Bombs Marine Corps base. So it was a great place to hold the retreat. And that's where I met Peter and Mike. And they actually authored the first script, I think, of this retreat program right there during the Joshua Tree retreat. And I attended their first one. And having been through a whole panoply of treatment modalities, and believe me, I've done it all, EMDR, biofeedback, all that. I'm both PTSD, TBI. I was in a coma in Vietnam. I thought I'd expired every treatment program known to man until I met these guys. And they authored a script that just was an absolute breakthrough for storytelling. And the aspect that made for the breakthrough was the addition of civilians at all the retreats, where no longer were our stories truncated, cut off prematurely. As Colonel Williams would probably know, we used the phrase, oh, honey, pass the salt. You know, you could never get your story finished. And at that first retreat, I left saying to my wife, I think I can fly. You know, something just happened here, and it has to be related to the scripted nature of this civilian addition and the listening level, because telling our stories to each other, as you saw in the beginning of this recording, we could go on till the sun goes down telling our war stories, but adding the civilian population just makes all the difference. And that's all I got for now.
Well, thank you, Mike. Yeah. I want to go to Michael I did it again. Cicinato. Cicinato. Michael,
you got it.
Got it finally. Anyway, you are the president of ElderWarriors.org. And I'm reading from your biography here. It's that you've been heavily involved with veterans, helping veterans and Veterans Treatment Center and so forth in this San Luis Obispo yes. portion of in California. How did this idea come about for you?
Well, when I retired at the age of 71, I asked my community, my parish. I'd been there for 28 years, which is unusual. I was vested. But anyway, I asked them to pray that I would be guided by God to what ministry I should have in my retirement that I could do. And I figured in retirement, I could do ministry at my pace. And when it became clear that I was being called to deal with veterans with PTSD, I was saying, God, you got to be kidding. I was an anti-war person, okay, not anti-veteran, but anti-war. I actually helped work with some of our vets before. But at any rate, I had a lot of learning, and thank God my bishop gave me a year to work on this, in which I made two different trips to Vietnam with Ed Tick and in his healing program. And then I also got to go to New Zealand to visit the Maori people because they have very specific healing process. And what I've learned is because there's been a healing process throughout the centuries, a lot with the indigenous people, with the Greeks even had it. But it involved storytelling where it could be heard without judgment, without critique, without analysis or diagnosis. You know, there's a place for those things, but in this, there wasn't. You just listened with respect for the storyteller and the story, and then ritual. And I learned that the storytelling, the ability to do that in safety and to tell your true story to both veterans and civilians who wouldn't be commenting, they'd be listening with respect, that then allowed the ritual processes and the other pieces to work for healing, forgiveness, grief, loss, all of that. But additionally, as I began working with Peter and I met at 29 Palms there, and as I began to work with him, we also realized the civilian piece that EdTech recognized was needed, but the civilians needed to understand how to listen. The other part was the civilians had a moral duty to accept responsibility for what we ask of our veterans and our warriors when they go. And it's a moral responsibility not only for what we ask them to do, but for them as they come back with what that effect has had on them. We see PTSD as post-traumatic soul distress. So we see it as a soul wound. And yes, it affects physically, mentally, the whole being, the whole person. But it's primarily a soul wound. And it comes from what we call a shredding of the soul, where in order to do the work of war, you have to separate yourself from your humanity. Okay? And that is brilliantly taught. And by all the preparations we have for our warriors, all the training is just expert at doing that. The thing is we don't do anything to reconnect them to their family, their humanity, or anything else when they come back. And that's what we seek to do in this journey. So it's seeking to make the reconnection that provides healing for our vets, but it also owning the moral responsibility for those of us who are civilians. In New Zealand, for example, when they listen to the story, they tell the veterans coming back, look, we asked you to go. So it's the war and everything that you did and everything that happened in the war is on us, is our responsibility. We own it with you. We own it as a community. And then it's our job to bring you back, okay, and to bring you back. And they basically, the Maori guys told me, you bring them back to God, to nature, and to humanity, the people. So that's pretty much how we began. Peter and I began to design the ritual process. That ritual was an area that I was trained in. Richard Rohr is one of our Catholic priests, a Franciscan priest, many know, was my mentor in that and dealing with men's work and men's wounds. So that gave me that component. So at any rate, that's where we started. And then I guess I should probably lead on to Peter to fill out the
Yeah,
blanks.
I want to go over
Unless you
to
have any
Peter
questions.
Peter Sternberg, and Peter is one of the directors of ElbertWarriors.org. He's also a psychotherapist in Chicago. See, this is a worldwide program nationwide today, for sure. So, Peter, how did you get involved in this whole thing? I know Michael just mentioned that you met together out at 29 Palms.
I attended the conference that Ed Tick was running and Joshua Tree. It was a powerful conference for me personally as well as professionally. I learned for the first time about moral wounding. That moral wounding is a component of most post-traumatic stress disorder, certainly military post-traumatic stress disorder. And this comes out of the work of Jonathan Shay, who spent his career working with veterans, a psychiatrist working with Vietnam veterans. And he developed this understanding of the wound that comes to our moral sense through two ways. One is when we are asked to do something that goes against the mores, the values, the moral system that we were raised in, and learning how to be an effective warrior is that exactly. And the other is when a person feels betrayed by authority. This is the other way in which our moral sense is wounded. And Ed Tick spoke about this. I had a personal understanding of it in terms of, man, I was going over experiences of my own life and realized that even though I was not in, I had not served in the military, I did go to military school as an adolescent, but never served in our armed forces. I thought about my own experiences and realized that I had experienced moral wounding and had some signs and symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder myself. And this led me to a deepening contact and friendship with Father Mike. And out of our conversations, he told me that he was working on a retreat for veterans. And based on what I was talking about myself, he was very interested in seeing if I would collaborate with him. And I said, yes, I would. And almost immediately, we landed on the idea of healing the split between the military community and the civilian community. That there is a split that is promulgated by the civilians. We ask people to be our warriors, and then we don't want to know about their experience. We don't want to know what they did. We don't want to know the effect that it had on them. We thank them for their service, but mostly we don't want to know. And there's the split. And there is the moral wound to the warrior who feels that they don't have a way back into the society that sent them into the military. And so we knew from the beginning that whatever we put together as a healing journey had to include civilians being present and listening to veterans without analysis, without diagnosis, without critique, just acceptance, receiving the veteran stories. And that when the civilians do that from a place of heart and compassion, and responsibility taking, magic seems to happen.
Yeah, I was thinking, as you mentioned, Jonathan Shea, and I'm tooting my horn, or our horn here on Veterans Radio. We interviewed him quite a while ago because he had written a couple of books, Odysseus and Achilles in Vietnam, and which I guess it sounds like you folks have read and probably utilized. He was in I think it was a Boston VA.
Yes, exactly. We studied his work, Achilles in Vietnam and Odysseus in America, and it's a brilliant understanding of the story of the Iliad as telling the story of moral wounding.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I understand that you have an event coming up here, or not right away, but in 2025. So, yeah. Michael, I'm going to ask you, where and when?
It's in San Juan Bautista, near Salinas, California. At a beautiful retreat center. Again, as Michael said earlier, Padre said earlier, it's a Catholic retreat center, but the retreats are not Catholic. They just happen to own the best damn real estate in California, probably inherited it all from the Spaniards. But they're wonderful places. This one is really cool. March 23rd to March 27th, 4 days, private room, 3 meals a day. It's a Franciscan center. I guess I said that. We're filling up faster than we ever have. I've been with these guys for 10 years now. And we got a lot of help from where I live in the mountains. I'm by Lake Arrowhead, California. We've got help from the Legion, VFW. Just got $2,500 from the Rotary a couple days ago. So far, you guys correct me if I'm wrong. So far, the 10 years I've been with them, no veteran that can't afford it has ever had to pay. We've covered every one of them. Isn't that correct?
If someone truly cannot pay the fee, that they can attend, they could still attend.
Yeah.
You never turn anyone down.
We never turn anyone down. And one of the critical, I wouldn't call it a sales job, just out recruiting, is that none of our staff, none of our board are paid, compensated. Some of you who have been in this, I can tell Dale has and Tom Williams has, PTSD has turned into a cottage industry.
Yeah.
And we're not in that lane. Not a single soul is paid a thing here. 7/8 of that money goes to room and board, printing costs. We have to have flyers and stuff. And some collateral material. I think we just ordered caps for the first time in 10 years.
Well, I just think it sounds like what you guys are doing is terrific. For those who can't see the video of it, we just saw the hat. I want to thank all three of you for being on Veterans Radio. The organization is elderwarriors.org. You can find out more about their retreat that's coming up in March of 2020. How can it be 2025 already? if there is a fee, what is the fee if you can afford to pay it?
It's $800 is what it costs us. We charge what it costs us. So okay. It's $800. We would gladly accept more because that helps.
And this is open to
4 days.
4.5 days, actually.
It's 4.5 days. You hear that we provide scholarship money for people who cannot afford. We run on people's giving, on philanthropy that comes our way. Sure. So if anybody feels so inclined, please do.
Elderwarriors.org. This is open to all veterans and civilians?
Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations to you for what you're doing. I'm anxious to talk to you again as we get closer to March to find out what's going on and with the whole thing, and maybe we can carry this discussion on, because it's valuable information that we all need to have, you know, not just the veterans of the community, but as you mentioned, the civilians. This is what we've been trying to do. And one of our mission statements is, you know, not just to tell the story of, you know, America's, you know, warriors and so forth, but to invite the civilian world in to see what these men and women have gone through. So on behalf of all of us here at Veterans Radio, I want to thank all three of you for stopping by today from all over California and Chicago. And we look forward to seeing you again and talking again.
Be happy to come back. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you all very much. All right. So that's elderwarriors.org. Make sure that you check them out. I think this sounds like a great program. It's probably something that is spreading out across the country, I am sure. We need to take a break. Right now, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tom Williams, retired U.S. Marine. We had Marines on today. And we'll be talking about his book, series of books called Heart of a Marine. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We will be right back after this.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
PFC Raymond Clausen, a helicopter mechanic, volunteered to participate in a rescue mission. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
The Marine platoon had been trapped in a minefield outside of Da Nang. One Marine was already dead and 11 wounded. It was Clausen's helicopter that had inserted the Marines, and the crew felt responsible for getting them out. He leaned out the side door to determine where mines had already exploded to help the choppers land. Then he jumped out and moved toward one of the wounded. As enemy fire bracketed him, he picked up the man, carried him to the helicopter, and returned for a second Marine. Clausen made 6 trips into the minefield, saving 18 Marines. Only when he was sure that all were safely aboard did he signal the pilot to lift off and leave the combat zone. President Nixon presented him the Medal of Honor on June 15, 1971, shaking his hand and saying, "Well done, Marine."
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest among us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. If you know a veteran in crisis, don't wait, reach out. Call the Veterans Crisis Line at 988, then press 1. 988, press 1. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and joining me from Australia, of all places, is Lieutenant Colonel Tom Williams, retired United States Marine Corps, and he has started writing a series of books called The Heart of a Marine. And the first book is called Doorsteps of Hell. Let me give you a quick background on Tom. He's been everywhere. It seemed like I was going to try and do this, but you know, he's brought up in Georgia, went to college in Georgia. Then when he joined the Marines, did 2 tours in Vietnam, went from there everywhere. He's just been all over the world. He's a trainer. Was with the Marines, as I said, and ended up in the Middle East and every place else. So the idea here is I got to bring Tom on because this is, I think you're going to really enjoy this portion of the program. So Tom, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale.
It's a pleasure to have you on. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, in reading your book, it's just, It's the story of so many veterans that we've had the privilege of talking to here on Veterans Radio. Is, you know, you weren't the greatest student in the world initially, but you had language, you had linguistic skills, and that, you know, that were developed when you were, you know, when your father took you all over the world.
Well, I think just the other day, I had an encounter with somebody, and they were about to have a child, he and his wife. And I said, you know, the best gift you can give that child is to put him in a play group of youngsters that speak a different language other than English, because learning another language leads to additional languages. I learned Arabic and French as a youngster between the ages of 6 and 9, and that opened the door. I wouldn't say it opened the door. It caused the Marine Corps to say, your language skill is such that you're too smart to go to Ranger School, so we're going to send you to language school. Well, I was heartbroken in a way, because I wanted that Ranger quota. All my close friends were Army Ranger or Airborne Rangers from North Georgia College. But over time, I realized that was a gift that just kept on giving. You know, in Vietnam, I learned I was able to interrogate prisoners. I was able to influence Vietnamese and win friends.
Well, I know that just the idea of being able to speak another language is amazing to me. And I don't have the skills of doing that, but I admire you. So let's go back. So tell me why you decided at this point in your life to start writing stories about Marines.
Well, you know, I'll be 80 in December. And I said to myself, self, what are you going to leave behind? And there's a void out there, a void in that there are not enough of us who have been in the military that pass on the lessons we have learned, not just about combat. Combat, yes, is very important. Once the politicians have failed to achieve by political means what they want to achieve, we are then thrown into the breach, and we do what they are not able to do. So I said I would start a series based on my career, and because I'm a diarist, I have over 100 diaries in my library right over there that I've written. I can recall any day of the year since 1968. So that's a resource that enables me to write the book that I've written, this first book. The second book is about my second tour, Aerial Observer, and as an aerial observer embedded with the Vietnamese. And I have finished that book, but we're polishing it. The third book will be about my experiences as the NATO amphibious operations officer in Naples, Italy. A lot of that book will be about antiquity. And then the third book will be about Desert Storm.
Okay. Well, I know in reading your book that you do have an incredible memory, obviously, and I'm sure the diaries help, because I don't remember what happened yesterday. But, you know, that's what happens with most of us. I want to kind of go back and take this chronologically. I'd like to go back and talk about your upbringing, because you did not have the best upbringing until a certain gentleman, you know, came into your life. And so can you talk about growing up in Georgia?
Well, I didn't grow up in Georgia so much as okay, let me go all the way back. I was abandoned as an infant. My mother handed me from pillar to post to family members all over the Savannah, South Georgia area. My mother met and married Carl Felton Williams, at the time a major in the U.S. Air Force, one of the founding fathers of the U.S. Air Force JAG in 1947. I then found myself on a ship, a military transport ship going to Morocco. All of a sudden, all my playmates are Arabs and French kids. Well, if you don't speak, you don't play. My dad rented a French citrus orchard outside of Rabat. We lived there for 3 years. We went to souks. My dad, being a history buff, took me to my first Roman ruin, Volubilis, in Morocco. That gave me a passion which continues for Roman history, or antiquity, if you will. Mm-hmm. Then came back to the States, and he was the staff judge advocate at Travis Air Force Base. then the staff judge advocate at Shaw Air Force Base in South Carolina. And the next thing you know, I'm in Japan as a high school student, and I'm learning a little bit of Japanese. After that, Dad decided to retire, and that's when we went back to the farm. I was a junior and senior in high school.
I lost my audio here.
Can you hear me?
Now I can. I lost your audio after your dad retired.
Yeah, Dad retired. We went back to Georgia, and Dad and his brother and his mother owned a farm that had been established in 1832.
Wow.
Georgia was not a state. You know, it was called the Indian Territory at that time. Well, we just kept building on the farm, and I learned to manage field hands. I drove a tractor. I raised peanuts, cotton, corn, and soybeans. We had cattle. We had pigs, goats, and a few sheep. Well, then I went off to North Georgia College, and that's where I really found the true value of Tom William, at the military school at North Georgia College.
Yeah, I wanted to spend some time at North Georgia, because evidently this is it was a pretty well-known, and I guess it still is a well-known kind of a military school, sort of like the Citadel type of thing, with their ROTC program.
That's correct. There are five essential military schools at that time, the Citadel being one, VMI, North Georgia College, Norwich, and Texas A&M. Of course, we at North Georgia, we took pride in the fact that we were at the foot of the Appalachian Mountains, and we were co-located, Dahlonega, Georgia, with the mountain phase of the Ranger program. And so I became, in time, the executive officer of the Mountaineering Club platoon. Because I was a stepchild, I was expected to run the farm in the summer, and then during school year at college, I earned my spending money by serving meals in the mess hall, the school mess hall. And then the dietitian got me another job running the movies on Friday and Saturday night. So
they don't do this anymore. I don't think, you know, kids that are working their way through school, we don't hear about them running. Well, they don't need projectors anymore, but the idea of, you know, working the mess hall, whatever it took to get you in through school.
That's correct. Well, I had to first learn how to study. I mean, I was on probation initially, because I had very little supervision as a student in high school. I was kind of an action junkie on steroids, or you might say I was Huckleberry Finn on steroids in my youth.
It sounds like it. In reading the book, the first book, The Doorsteps of Hell, is kind of gives us a background of how Tom kind of developed. What is it that you took away from North Georgia? When you graduated from there, you were ready to go. What is it that you learned in your
There's probably three or four things. The first, in college, yes, you're there to get a degree. But the most important degree that you receive is a lifelong group of friends. Those fellow students, both male and female, are some of the closest friends I ever had. Second, I learned who Tom Williams was. Okay, I found him embedded in this body. And I became known because I became known as Action. I was constantly on the move, either academically doing patrols, climbing, or writing. And I reckon the last thing, I fell in love with the military mindset. I went back last year and I was offered the opportunity to address the cadet leadership. And the first question I asked the student, the cadet leadership was, how many of you are hunters? There were no hands raised. I said, you understand that you're here in preparation for a career in the military. You're joining a hunting club. And you'd better be a better hunter than your adversary, because he has a rifle and he is hunting you. And I emphasized something else too, that your mission as a company grade officer, second lieutenant, first lieutenant, and captain will always be to close with and capture the enemy. But don't ever forget, once you have captured your enemy, it is as much your obligation to protect him as it was your original intent to kill him. Unfortunately, that was not emphasized enough, I think, during my time in the service. That's how we ended up with somebody like Callie. And I think you know the story of Callie.
Yes, I do. All right, so from North Georgia College, you decided to go into the Marines for some unknown reason. Why did you decide to go the Marine route instead of the Air Force?
Well, I had a little conflict with the military department at North Georgia College. There were some damn good instructors, but I found that amongst the cadet corps, there were a handful of cadets that stood out. And those cadets were all Marine contract students. So I decided I want to be one of them. I don't want to be in this large, huge thing called the Army. Nothing against the Army. I learned an awful lot at North Georgia College about tactics, techniques, and procedures. I have a great admiration for the airborne, the Rangers, the special forces. But think about it. They're all specialists in the Army. I wanted to be a Marine because of what I saw the Marines cadets at North Georgia displayed as the best, if you will.
Well, the Marines are Marines. They're always Marines.
Well, if you're going to be a Marine, I always say, be a badass Marine.
I agree. So you decided to join the Marine, and you went through all of the different schools for the Marines, the OCS and the, what's that other one, the new school? Where did that go? I wrote it down somewhere here. Oh, the basic school. You had OCS, and then you had the basic school. Could you, and we're going to run out of time. I can already tell this, but can you tell me that it's OCS just the normal officer candidate school, and then the basic school is more intense?
The first thing you need to know about Marine Corps ROTC is that it's a deselection process. They're doing everything they can to break you. They want to know what kind of metal, M-E-T-T-L-E, you are made of. And second, they then will build you up to be the Marine that will go to the basic school.
Okay.
The proudest I am of my OCS, Officer Candidate School, is I set the Marine Corps record 100-yard, 14 obstacle O course. I ran that in 52 seconds. And then TBS, you then learn what it is to be an officer, what it is to lead, what it is with every weapon, squad tactics, platoon tactics, company tactics. You fire every weapon. And then you go to any specialty courses after the basic school and become an artilleryman or an aviator. Or in my case, I went to language school before going to Vietnam.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's the training you received just sounds remarkable to me and is so intense. I guess I'd never really thought about it. You know, being a warrant officer, our only job was to fly. That was it. We didn't have any command responsibility at all. Oh, you know, in fact, we could tell a colonel if he got on our aircraft and he wanted to do something, we could say, no, get off. And you couldn't do anything to us. That's why we stayed in our seats so often after a flight. But the responsibilities that you had as a, especially I think as a Marine, you know, platoon leader, squad leader, company leader, whatever it is. I mean, you have that responsibility for those men under you to keep them alive. And I know that that's was your main goal when you got to Vietnam.
Well, keeping them alive, yes, but you also had to trick the enemy. You had, because this was a hide and seek. It was a platoon commander, company commander war for those of us who participated in it as infantry commanders at whatever level. I became known for moving at night in the rain, and that really didn't make my Marines very happy. But I learned early on, and I learned through my dad, and we were getting feedback from other North Georgia cadets who had already been commissioned and were in Vietnam, lessons learned. That's kind of some of this idea of why I'm writing. Mm-hmm. So we at North Georgia took very seriously, we're going to war. There ain't no if, it's when. And what do you want to know? Well, you better be good at it. Map and compass, patrolling, ambushing. So,
yeah, I know that you did all that, and I was thinking of one of the stories in the book that I read was about, and this is a little out of context, but you were talking about an M79 blooper.
Yes,
does that trigger a memory for you trying to get across a rice paddy?
My company commander ordered me around a huge rice paddy, and I was supposed to tie in on the river, and then he was supposed to take a platoon, and we were going to squeeze the enemy on the river and trap him. I warned my company commander before I left him to make the trek around the paddy, huge paddy. I'm talking 1,000 meters. Don't leave without a platoon. Your headquarters group's not big enough. Well, he didn't. He thought he could. This was his third tour. And he got himself pinned down in a bomb crater. I had to do a 90-degree turn to come relieve him. Across the paddy, the enemy were coming out. He was driving them off. He was defending himself, but he's in a bomb crater. He's driving the enemy back, but they're keeping him pinned down. And they started coming out into the rice paddy in my direction, not knowing that I was there. Well, hello, surprise, surprise. My first kill was one of my bloopers, M79 men, raised his weapon, Kentucky Windage at max range, 305 meters. He hit him in the chest, and he disappeared. And we continued the attack, killing enemy as they came out in our direction. Just to deviate a little bit, the OV-10 pilot, and that was the first experience with an aerial observer I had, that kind of said to me, if I live through this, I want to be one of those guys. Because his eyes in the sky, like you will know, is able to see the big picture and not just what's in front of you. And I later worked for him, that pilot.
Really? All right. Well, yeah. We're running, as I said, you know, we're running up against the end. So, you know, we've got about 2 minutes left before we have to get out of here. And so can you tell me one lesson that you would like to leave our audience with today? We're going to have you back on, I promise. But today, let's say one lesson.
The one lesson that I would tell you is that on the battlefield, there is a secret weapon. And that secret weapon is the individual Marine or soldier. You take care of your soldier, you take care of your Marine, they will take care of business, and they will take care of you.
I remember reading that in the book. You're talking about what your responsibilities as a commander are, is to, you know, to get, and also to get to know your men.
Yes, sir. And I often regret that I didn't get to know every Marine personally. I knew the ones I could count on, and in particular, I had a corporal who was my platoon sergeant. Tommy Bird, T-Bird. I have the highest regard for him.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, because, you know, it's tough. And then I'm, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier on with our elder warriors, is it's so important for us to tell these stories, to get them out so that we can, you know, clear about, you know, get rid of the cobwebs in our minds about what was really going on. We've been talking here with Tom Williams, and as I said, we need to talk more about it. He's coming out with a series of books entitled Heart of a Marine. And the first book is titled Doorsteps of Hell. And you can get this on you have a website. What is your website, Tom?
My website is www.heartofamarineseries.com. And the first book is this one right here. And right. That's me on the cover as a 24-year-old.
Yeah, I love those old pictures. They were great. So, and you can get them on Amazon, because I got a Kindle version of the book on Amazon. It's a great story. Tom, thank you so much for your time. Don't go away. We can continue this conversation when we go off the air. We are going to go out as usual with a God Bless America. You know, I love this song. I think it's so important. This version happens to be Leanne Reams, or Rhymes. And so this is the version that we're going to have today. I think I'm coming up toward the end of the program, aren't I? I'm really at the end. Okay. So until next week, this is Dale Thrombury for all of us here at Veterans Radio. You are dismissed.